is the attorney for Ben Roethlisberger, who yesterday it was announced was suspended 6 games by the commissioner of the National Football League. David Cornwall is with us on Mike and Mike in the Morning. Mr. Cornwall, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Greeny. Good morning. How are you? Hi, Mike.
Good. How are you doing?
Good morning. Thank you for the time today. Let's get right into it. What was Ben's reaction yesterday when it was announced what the suspension would be?
Well, obviously, he was disappointed by the number of games that he was suspended. But, you know, throughout this process, he knew that in addition to the legal issues we were confronting here in Georgia, we were going to eventually have to deal with the commissioner under the conduct policy. And Ben very early on made the commitment to be held accountable for his conduct. I think the difficulty is that, you know, with all due respect, the media portrayal of the events in Georgia was, while intense, was somewhat one-sided. And the discipline coming on the heels of that media coverage, you know, it seems like it's been lost in the story that he didn't commit a crime. His conduct was not criminal, recognizes that there are some judgment issues, but he's willing to be held accountable. But he was disappointed by the number of games, as was I, frankly.
What was your expectation?
Well, you know, it became very clear early on that the commissioner thought a suspension was necessary. He never really told us a specific number that he was thinking about in terms of a suspension, but in a conversation that the commissioner and I had, I believe it was this past Saturday or Sunday, he used the term indefinite, that, you know, an indefinite suspension was possible. I understand that he may have expressed to the Rooneys that it was 8 to 10 games was within the realm of possibility, but he was very accessible to me, and as was Jeff Pash, and we had, you know, numerous discussions on the issue and laid out the facts that we offered our own summary of the GBI report and some of the findings that hadn't been caught the media's attention, such as Sergeant Blass' immediate assessment that this young lady's outcry was not credible. There was a bar manager who observed Ben and the young lady sitting outside of the bathroom and reported in his interview with the GBI that there was no indication of coercion or force. And, you know, the commissioner had an open mind, and I think based on our discussions that he came down to the 4-6 range, but we had hoped that 4 would be the starting point and that Ben would be able to work it down to 2. The commissioner initially was not receptive to this conditional mechanism that he ultimately embraced, but again, in our discussion on Sunday, I believe it was, he indicated that he was open to that concept.
Mike and Mike with Ben Roethlisberger's attorney, David Cornwall. When you were in the meeting with Ben Roethlisberger, with Roger Goodell, what was Roger Goodell's tone toward Ben?
Very serious. Very serious. And, you know, the dynamics of this thing are very complicated and something that, you know, we'd probably, you guys could write another book about. But very serious. And the commissioner sees a clear distinction between you know, the assessment of law enforcement and the district attorney that Ben did not commit a crime, and the issues that are a little more amorphous, a little more difficult to wrap our arms around, which is the impact of Ben's conduct on Ben's stature and reputation, and on the stature, reputation, and the popularity, not just of the NFL, but also of NFL players. And that's, you know, what he's enforcing through the conduct policy. And he made that clear, not only in the meeting that we had with Ben. I believe you guys will recall that down in Orlando at the owners meeting, he announced that he wanted to meet with Ben. And I was at the owners meeting, and the commissioner and I had, you know, 2 pretty long conversations about a number of issues, but our second one focused on Ben. And he made it clear that, you know, this was something that he was going to view under the conduct policy, and based on, you know, other cases that I'd handled for other players under the policy, I understood where his thinking was.
What has been the role of the players' union in all this as far as the meeting that took place and anything going forward?
Well, you know, we made the assessment, and, you know, I talked to Dee about this before the meeting that, you know, the nature of the personal issues that were being discussed, we wanted to have, you know, as few people as possible in the meeting. Ryan Tolner, Bruce Tolner, and I accompanied Ben. Ryan and Bruce are Ben's agents. And I said it to Dee that I also was concerned about whether the dynamic between the Players Association and the league, given collective bargaining issues, would have some impact on how this thing went. And, you know, he understood. He didn't necessarily agree with that assessment. It's not my first rodeo. I've done these things before. But, you know, I kept Dee abreast. We probably had three or four conversations and emails going back. And I know he talked to the commissioner a couple times as well. So while they were not present and really didn't play a leading role in the process, they certainly were kept abreast. And, you know, the issues were laid out as to why we wanted to approach it that way.
David Cornwell is the attorney for Ben Roethlisberger. He's with us here on Mike and Mike in the Morning. You mentioned that Ben has not been charged with a crime and will not be, but you also acknowledge that you will accept the punishment. So I guess the question is, what does Ben acknowledge he did wrong? What wrongdoing does he acknowledge?
Well, you know, it really is, again, difficult to put your finger on. Poor judgment. Is really what
how so? What did he do that was poor judgment?
As the commissioner noted, although the facts are that Ben did not buy these young ladies drinks, the commissioner in our discussions noted that not only are players required to engage in responsible consumption of alcohol on their own, but they're also not to be involved in situations where alcohol is being consumed in an irresponsible way by others. And the commissioner believes and then understands the commissioner's view that at a minimum, the consistent theme of alcohol contributed to this controversy. So it's, you know, a number of things, you know, kind of the undertone of the sexual issues that may offend the sensibilities of some, and specifically some of the fans and people in the Rooney's organization, in the Steelers organization, and in the NFL. All of these things were part of the assessment. Ben understands that. But, you know, we just have to move forward.
I guess with this being Ben's second time going around with a situation like this, what would give the fans, especially the Steeler fans, reason to believe that Ben has learned from his lessons and is ready to make better decisions?
Well, I think the scrutiny that, you know, frankly, he has enjoyed on the field, and it hasn't been that much fun about off the field issues, will continue. And he'll prove through his actions that the person that has been portrayed, and he understands clearly, this has been a difficult process. Look, all of us were 28 years old at one point, and, you know, the commissioner even reminded me of that on Sunday. When we were 28, the commissioner and I were working together in the league office. And at first I thought that, you know, he was wrapping his arm around me, kind of making that point. Maybe he was threatening me with disclosure of some of the things we did when we were 28. I'm not sure. But when we were 28, we went through the process of maturing as young men without the glare of the media spotlight. Unfortunately or fortunately, it goes with the job that Ben has, that what he does is always in the glare of the public and media spotlight. So he understands that. He's going to have to conduct himself differently going forward, and he's committed to doing so. As far as we're concerned, this is a four-game suspension. Ben is going to meet the conditions and then some to earn back the right to get on the field and then earn the respect of his teammates, the fans, players throughout the NFL, and the media. He's committed to do it. He's a winner. This guy is competitive, and they've put something in front of him and said, you can achieve this. He'll get it done.
David Cornwell, the attorney for Ben Roethlisberger. I have 1 minute left. Obviously, you and he have heard the trade rumors in which his name has been mentioned over the last 24 hours or so. How does he feel about the possibility of being traded away from the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, you know, I think the reality is that what's been portrayed, at least to our understanding in the media, is not really where the Steelers' head is. But Ben wants to be part of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and we believe the Pittsburgh Steelers want Ben to be part of that organization.
Fair enough. David, we thank you very much for the time. If there's anything further that you want to share, or if Ben wants to make a statement or anything like that, you always have our phone number. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you both.
Thanks,
have
David.
A great day.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
First round tonight, second and third tomorrow. They wrap it up on Saturday. Chris Mortensen, our NFL insider extraordinaire, is with us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. And so, Mort, certainly you spent your day yesterday chasing all the conversation about trade possibilities involving Ben Roethlisberger. When push comes to shove, what's going to happen today?
Well, you know, I actually didn't spend as much time with the Roethlisberger trade situations. I let Shefty chase that down. He's younger, a little quicker. but Roethlisberger and his status with the league is something that's dominated my time ever since the event. And so when it came down, you know, it's kind of like, I think we even talked about it last week, is I really always believed that a two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback was going to be held to a higher standard. Because think about it, no charges, no arrest or what have you. And because of the concept of, you know, reputation, integrity, based off what Roger Goodell, the commissioner, has established. And when you read what he says there, you know, when he talks about even mentioning, hey, in your 6 years, you've thrilled and disappointed fans. When have you heard that? When have you heard the word intervention, intensive behavioral care? You hear all those things. And so, you know, I had a lot of focus on that. And I do know that 8 to 10 games was on the table at one point. Yeah, I know you're going to talk to David Cornwell later. It'll be interesting to hear what he says. But in terms of Roethlisberger, I'm not sure that, you know, I don't think he's going to be traded. Let me put it that way. Are there going to be trades? Absolutely. There are going to be trades. I think once we clear the top five, although the Redskins would love to get out of four and pick up a second-round pick. They don't have a second or third-round pick. But, I mean, they're Albert Haynesworth, okay, you keep hearing the Redskins won't trade him. I would stay on your toes for that one. O.C. Umeyura of the New York Giants, depending on certain things that may happen in this draft, stay on your toes for that. Even a guy like Darren McFadden, who was the fourth pick in the draft by the Oakland Raiders, you know, stay on your toes for even something like him. You know, I know that Sean Merriman, you haven't heard anything about him. You know, he's got to do the whole restricted free agent thing. So there's going to be a lot of action, and then we are really looking, as I said, we may not have franchise brand quarterbacks, but these are brand name quarterbacks, and there's going to be a lot of focus and action on those guys.
Do you think all four will be taken in the first round?
I think it's a possibility. You know, we know Bradford's going to, you know, be the first guy off the board. Jimmy Clausen, I agree with everybody else, don't know where he's going. Hey, I have no doubt that Charlie Weiss is doing some campaigning for Jimmy Clausen with the number five spot. I just can't imagine Scott Pioli, the general manager who invested so much in Matt Cassel, basically giving up on Matt Cassel at this point. But then it's a matter of, okay, is Buffalo going to pass on Clausen? It appears yes. San Francisco definitely would have a discussion about Clausen. Interesting to watch teams like Denver. There's word that Philadelphia Eagles ready to make a move up, whether it's up into the top 10 where Cleveland's at, whether it's where Denver's at. Denver moves back. Denver could take a shot at Tim Tebow. New England could take a shot at Tim Tebow. And then, yes, with Colt McCoy, everybody's watching what the Browns and Minnesota Vikings do. So I believe that two quarterbacks will go in the first round, and if four go, I'm not going to be surprised.
Mike and Chris Mortensen, what would the Eagles be going up to get?
Well, you know, you have to believe they're going up there to get the best defensive player. You know, usually Andy Reid likes what we call the bigs, the offensive defensive linemen. We know they need a defensive end, but they also need safeties, and even a corner. And there's two safeties in this draft that have a chance to be, you know, Pro Bowl players, Eric Berry and Earl Thomas. Eric Berry of Tennessee and Earl Thomas of Texas. So that would probably be their target. And then there are certain impact players in this draft. You know, you have guys that can change a game. You want those guys. Those guys, a guy like C.J. Spiller of Clemson. I'm not saying he's going to Philadelphia, but he's just the guy that you better keep an eye on, because, you know, people look at him and they see a bigger Reggie Bush or another Chris Johnson. And Chris Johnson, who was picked 25th in his draft, he improved a guy like C.J. Spiller's stock tremendously.
We had said Mel talking about it, saying he's one of five guys he would bet would wind up in the Pro Bowl. Chris Mortensen, we'll all be watching tonight. Call us if anything changes. Thank you.
All right, guys, and follow us on Twitter, too. We'll be on Twitter. Mine's Mort Report, and everybody knows Shefties.
You got it, baby.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
All right, McShay, today it was Adam Schefter who sort of dropped a little bit of a bomb on the program,
right,
saying his prediction is that Jimmy Clausen is falling to number 30 in the first round tonight to the Minnesota Vikings. Now, I think it makes sense for the Vikings.
Right.
If you think he's a great quarterback waiting to happen, you let him sit behind Favre for a year, and then, boom, he's there. Do you think he really does fall that far?
Here's the thing. I've got him at 35 overall would be the final rankings I gave. So I don't think it's that. To me, it's not that big of a shock in terms of where I think he should go, but where I've thought he actually will go, there's a big discrepancy. I still think he goes somewhere in the teens. I think ultimately the problem is, and I understand what Adam's saying, and maybe it happens. I mean, you know, Shefty talks to everyone and has a better feel for where teams are leaning at this point. The hard part is figuring out what team, you know, because you sit there and you say, well, if Buffalo doesn't take him at 9, if he gets past that 9th spot, where does he go? San Francisco, 13-17 possibilities, but there, it seems like they have other needs they're really targeting. Seattle, possibly just the value sitting at 13 if they really, or 14 if they really like him there. But they need an offensive tackle. They need a safety. They could use a running back. I know that they love CJ Spiller like a lot of teams do, the Clemson running back. So if he gets past that initial wave, then he starts to fall because teams, and this is how it always goes. If you get past the initial, if the first half of the first round is a quarterback, it's tough to find a team in the back half because those are the good teams and the good teams already have quarterbacks.
A quarterback, yeah. So, and then as far as Tim Tebow, people starting to talk about him maybe getting into the end of the first round. What's changed? I mean, going all the way back at the Senior Bowl when everybody was ripping his style and wondering could he ever change to maybe this is a third round guy that's going to take a few years to develop even if he plays quarterback.
Right.
To now, maybe going to the end of the first round. What's changed?
I really don't think anything has. I just think it takes one. You know, it takes one team to fall in love with him and one team to have a plan in place. And I will say this, what could work against Jimmy Clausen, the back half of the first round, teams being set at quarterback, could work for Tim Tebow. Because Tim Tebow needs to go to a place where he has the time, the 2 to 3 years, to develop behind an established quarterback, not be pressured into playing early on. And maybe, I think the thing you do is, and I've talked to other general managers who think the same thing, if you're going to bring him in, get something out of him the first 2 years, whether it's special teams,
right,
a short yardage, when you get in the third and one, when you get in the goal line, run some kind of a wildcat package with him. He might be the best fullback in this draft, in all seriousness. I mean, he's the best power runner maybe in this draft from his instincts and power. So to me, if someone takes him, it's because they have a plan in place short-term and long-term. But I would never even think about drafting Tim Tebow before the third round.
Mike and Mike McShay is in studio with us. That certainly has been the player who has divided opinion more than any other. All right, let's look at it this way. I asked Mel Kiper this question this morning. I will ask you the same one.
Yep.
If I told you, Todd McShay, you have to bet an amount of money that will matter to you on 5 players that'll be drafted tonight that will eventually make the Pro Bowl in the NFL, who are the 5 guys?
I'm going to go with Gerald McCoy. I think he's going to find the right system in Tampa Bay and be that 3 technique, and I think he's going to be a dominant pass rusher. I'm going to avoid the probably the 2 players that get drafted, 1 and 2, respectively, Sam Bradford and Ndamukong Suh.
Why Suh?
I think he's going to be very good, but I could also envision he winds up taking on a lot of blockers and not maybe getting the statistics and the hype and the media attention that you would get for being a great player. I think, Gerald McCoy would be one. The 2 safeties I would probably put in there. I just think they're special playmakers, and they have an opportunity to jump in.
That'd be Eric Berry and Earl Thomas.
Earl Berry from Tennessee, Earl Thomas from Texas. C.J. Spiller. I think C.J. Spiller is among the top 6-7 players in this draft, and I think he fits perfectly in the NFL today. I really think the coming in, catching the ball, the explosiveness, the versatility that he brings. And I'm going to go with a player a little bit off the radar, but Brandon Graham from Michigan. Mm. I think this guy is
huge Senior Bowl, right? That's where he jumped onto the
scene. Huge Senior Bowl. He played in an awful defense the last 2 years at Michigan. He's a tough guy. You plug him in as a 3-4 outside linebacker, he can be the next Lamar Woodley, in my opinion.
For the record, Mel picked the same first 4 players you just did, and he picked Ndamukong Suh. So he put Suh among the 5 that would be Pro Bowlers. Mike and Todd McShay in our studio.
Yeah, so again, I guess we go to where will the action start?
Right.
You know, I know it's so tough to predict. You know, does so many people still seem to be leaning on the Redskins.
Washington drives me nuts.
Yeah, they seem to be driving everybody nuts.
And Bruce Allen's a Richmond guy. He's, you know, he's a spider, and I can't get a piece out of him. No idea where they're going to go. You know, just conventional wisdom is they take one of the top offensive
absolutely,
tackles.
Absolutely, yeah.
Russell Okung is the safer of the two. Trent Williams is the better athlete. If I was just grading on what I saw on tape, I would put Trent Williams ahead, and especially in their system where they're looking for more athletic offensive linemen, the zone blocking, looking for guys that with the that can move and get out in space. Williams is a better fit.
But that's the play, isn't it? The linemen, they're built to win right now,
right.
So take a guy that you could plug in
that's
and
what
help
I would
you
do.
Right
that's
now.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of speculation about them moving back. So if some team moves up. But if they stay there, I think that they wind up with an offensive tackle. I'm hearing a lot, and you never know what you get out of Kansas City, but I'm hearing Eric Berry's their player, the Tennessee safety at 5. Seattle at 6 will take the other offensive tackle. 7, Cleveland could get interesting. The most interesting scenario would be if Ben Roethlisberger were to get traded to Oakland. I'd say I don't think it's going to happen. But then obviously Cleveland becomes that hot spot. If
right.
there is a team out there that wants to trade up for Jimmy Clausen, because everyone has to assume that Pittsburgh moves into 8 and has to take a quarterback. Bradford's off the board. Clausen makes sense. We don't know if Pittsburgh would, but if you really love Jimmy Clausen, if there's a team out there that really does and has been quiet about it and kept it under wraps, that's the landing zone right there at number 7. But if not, I think Cleveland stays there and takes one of the top defensive players. I'm hearing Dan Williams from Tennessee and also Derek Morgan, the defensive end from
right.
Georgia Tech, who would be an outside linebacker in that 3-4 scheme.
Mike and McShay, in its own way, that would be a terrible situation for Clausen. You don't want to be the guy who goes in there
right.
And replacing Roethlisberger gets traded away, and now you're viewed as the guy who they decided, you know what, we can trade away a 28-year-old franchise quarterback
two-time
with two Super Bowl
yeah.
rings, who, by the way, will still be in the league and probably a very good player for a decade,
yep.
and we're putting all of this on you, rookie. Come on in, you
yeah.
know, and start playing. That would be, and oh, by the way, Ben Roethlisberger led a 15-1 team as a rookie starting quarterback.
It is,
that'd be a bad
he's, what,
situation.
I mean, he's in his
he's
prime.
He's 28.
Oh, so 28,
not,
yeah. You're right. I mean, he's got another
plenty of time.
Plenty of time. So you're going to be comparing careers the whole time. I don't think it's going to happen.
No.
I really
yeah,
don't.
I don't either.
The more the day has gone
yeah.
on, the more you're getting a sense it will not. But, I mean, this is the time
yep.
of misinformation, right?
Right?
No one's out there right now calling up Adam Schefter or Todd McShay and saying, oh, by the way, we're going to trade for Roethlisberger.
Right.
So it's not inconceivable.
Right. I think where we will see trades, though, is at 11, 12, 13, right in that range. I'm hearing Denver is willing to move back, that Philadelphia is hot on Earl Thomas. They could move up to that 11 spot. And then you start to see maybe if an offensive tackle falls, a team like Green Bay could move up, even though Ted Thompson doesn't do that a lot. And other teams trying to move up in that range to get the defensive ends. We mentioned Morgan from Georgia Tech, Jason Pierre-Paul from South Florida. So this first round may not see a lot of action, the first 7-10 picks. But when we get to 10, from that 10 to 20 range, it could be pick after pick after pick of movement.
You will be seeing Todd McShay and plenty of them tonight on ESPN's coverage of the NFL draft first round tonight, and you will hear him again live here tomorrow morning. So good of you. Thank you, man. I know it's a very busy day.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming in.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
Primetime NFL draft. It is Christmas Day. And this guy is Santa Claus. We're pleased to welcome Mel Kiper on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline here, Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio. How you feeling, Mel?
I'm hanging in there, guys. It's exciting to look out and see some sunshine in here in New York City and know that at 7:30 tonight we're going to tee it up in a primetime showing of the first round. It's pretty amazing.
That pre-draft meeting yesterday, how long ago yesterday?
You know, it didn't go that long. It went from, I think, 10 to 3.
That's it?
Yeah, because then we had to run over to Radio City and do some stuff. And, of course, we have another meeting today at 11 and another meeting tomorrow at 11. So now with the draft being at night tonight and tomorrow night, you can have meetings in the morning where, you know, in prior years you couldn't. So
right.
I guess over the long haul, it's probably more.
Mal Kiper's got,
he's got the
diet Sprite ready and he's ready to go. Okay, here we go. Value. All of us who have watched you on the draft for years hear you use the word value all the time. At this point, Mel Kiper Jr., what is the value of Ben Roethlisberger relative to a draft pick in the draft tonight?
I would think Greeny is probably a top 10 pick. I mean, you're talking about Oakland picking at 8, There's speculation there that if there was a trade made, the Raiders would be the kind of team that could make that move. So I would say right there in that eight spot, in that, you know, 8-9 spot in that particular area, and that's what it would take. Then it would be interesting if they did trade Ben Roethlisberger. Do they have an interest in Jimmy Clausen, who plays quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who can make up for the loss of a tremendous quarterback who was in the prime of his career? That's amazing that, you know, you would talk about Santonio Holmes and Ben Roethlisberger. They had that pass catch tandem to win the Super Bowl not that long ago. Now, you know, Santonio Holmes is with the Jets, and Ben, you know, right now, there's trade. That doesn't mean it will happen, but there is some trade speculation out there. Adam Schefter talked about it last night.
And we just had Adam Schefter on. He also talked about another name you just mentioned in Jimmy Clausen and the possibility of dropping, depending on, you know, teams and where they're going to go. What's the thought, or what was the consensus of the group at the meeting yesterday on what might happen with Jimmy?
You know, Mike, there's no consensus. Nobody knows where Jimmy's going. And that's the great thing. That's why with the draft, if we could all pin this down, it wouldn't be as exciting. Nobody knows where Jimmy Clausen's going. He is the wild card of the first round. He has fast become the most discussed player in the draft. He's overriding Tim Tebow right now. I think when you look at Jimmy, nobody knows. I still put him to Oakland, for obvious reasons. If they're interested in Ben, I said all along, they gotta get a quarterback. I mean, they got four guys on that roster, none of which you can win with. So to me, they're a team that, now Davis, he throws some curveballs, as you know, and nobody knows till draft day what the Raiders are really doing, even internally. So I would think that, that Jimmy Clausen would be in play there. If he's not, yeah, I mean, we've always said down to Seattle, San Francisco. I don't think San Francisco would take him. They have areas to fill in this draft that could catapult them. So I think they brought in Carr to compete with Alex Smith. But nobody knows. I still maintain that somehow, somewhere, he'll go in that top 10 to 12, but nobody can define where Jimmy Clausen's going to go.
And just, you mentioned, Mel mentioned he has him number 8 to Cleveland, and Todd McShay has him number 13 to the 49ers.
Although 8 to Oakland, right.
8 to Oakland, Mike.
8 to Oakland, I'm sorry. What
7
did I say?
Is Cleveland,
I'm sorry.
8 to Oakland,
sorry, 8
and
to Oakland.
Adam Schefter just came on the air and predicted he's going to fall all the way to 30 to Minnesota.
I brought that up yesterday. And if that happened, it wouldn't be something that hasn't happened. I mean, what did Rodgers go, 24?
Yeah.
You know, when he was projected, I put him number 1. When the draft report came out like 3 weeks before the draft, he was number 1. That's never – he went from number 1 3 weeks before the draft to 24. And Alex Smith went number 1. So it's a fine line, guys. I mean, when a player does start, if they start filling needs, it's like, well, we don't really need a quarterback, a young quarterback, that desperately. We can get this guy who fell to us, and we can fill this hole. You never know. I'll never say never about anything draft-related. Nobody's completely off base with anything because nobody knows. And that's why I'm always asked, who's going to be the shocking first-round pick? I hope there are shockers, because if I could predict it, it wouldn't be shocking. So I hope we sit here tomorrow and are talking about something in round 1 that was a complete curveball, like what happened with the Raiders last year with Darius Heyward-Bey with the 7th pick overall.
We will be talking with Mel tomorrow at this time, so you will hear his evaluation of round 1 of the NFL draft tomorrow right here with Mike and Mike. All right, Mel, let's do it this way. If I told you right now you have to bet an amount of money that matters to you on 5 players that will be Pro Bowlers. There are 5 players who will be drafted tonight who will wind up being Pro Bowl caliber players in the NFL. Who are the 5?
Ndamukong Suh, Gerald McCoy, I think Eric Berry, I would say Earl Thomas, the safety out of Texas. After that, and I'm obviously a Jimmy Clausen fan. I don't need to think about him down the road because I don't want to keep talking Jimmy up. But I think C.J. Spiller, because of his all-purpose ability, will be viewed like a Darren Sproles and a Leon Washington. He'll be viewed in that light. And I think that's why. And some people say Chris Johnson. I'm not going to go there because I think that's too much expectation. But I think he could have a role in all-purpose yardage, like a Spiller, like a Leon Washington, like a Sproles. I'm not going to go to Chris Johnson, but he does bring that kind of electrifying speed to the game.
How about an old lineman? You know, there's projected 6 offensive tackles basically in the first round.
Mike, they're good, and they're going to get pushed up there because they're left tackles. And I think a point was made. Jaws brought it up yesterday. Think about the last 3 Super Bowl winners and who their left tackles were. Ron Jaworski brought up a great point. I mean, the left tackle position hasn't been exactly star-studded with the last 3 Super Bowl winners. And you know, so the teams picking earlier all taking these left tackles, and we know why. But is Russell Okung or Trent Williams, are they elite? Are they Jonathan Ogden, Tony Boselli, Orlando Pace, Walter Jones? No. So I'm not going to say automatic Pro Bowlers in that group. I think the most talented kid of the tackles, and had he gone back, guys, he might have been the second, third, fourth pick in next year's draft, is Anthony Davis out of Rutgers. The only thing preventing him from being a top five pick, top 10 pick right now guaranteed, is he lacked consistency. When he was at his best, he was dominant. When he was a little, you know, concentration lapses worried you a little bit, but that kid's got awesome talent. He may still be there at 9 to 15 in that area.
Mel Kiper, obviously you'll see him tonight on ESPN, 7:30 Eastern time for the coverage. In 15 seconds, Mel, prediction for Washington, what are they going to do?
You know, I keep thinking that I've been talked out of it because it may be too costly for what St. Louis wants. So if St. Louis sticks it with Bradford, I think Trent Williams and Russell Okung would be in play. I've also heard that they could be looking to trade down. And by the way, guys, I have Tim Tebow in round one. So I stuck with Tebow. We talked about him yesterday. I think he goes somewhere between 22 and 32 in that area.
Yeah, the same thing.
Wow.
Adam Schefter just said he thinks Buffalo takes him, trades back up to get him late in the first round. Yeah, Mel dropped that bomb on us yesterday.
Yes, he did.
Thank you, Mel, for giving us a show yesterday with that, pretty much. All right, we'll be watching tonight, my friend, and we'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Thank you. Guys. Always a pleasure, man.
He is the best. Mel Kiper, I've said it before, spending the day with Mel in New York, the day of the draft. Now, it used to be on a Saturday.
Right, right.
And I remember having breakfast with him the day of the draft, back when you and I used to do it on ESPN Radio. Just Mel walking the streets of New York the day of the draft.
Elvis.
There's nothing more fun.
He's Elvis. And, boy, I tell you, this is really getting interesting now with all that was only for how long? Two quarterbacks talked about going in the first round. Now people are talking potentially all four of the top guys going in the first round.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
On 101 ESPN in St. Louis, here's Brian Burwell with us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Brian, how are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
Good.
We're well. First and foremost, you've covered sports and the league for a really long time. So I would just be curious to hear, as you've watched this Ben Roethlisberger situation play out, what's your perspective?
Well, the first thing that I'm delighted is that the commissioner actually was able to close off all the ridiculous outside noises and do what needed to be done, which is not take a racial scoreboard and actually punish Ben Roethlisberger, because Ben Roethlisberger deserved to be punished, not because, well, you did it to the brothers, now you've got to do it to him. No, you did it to the brothers because they broke the law. Now you're doing it to Ben because he misbehaved really badly.
And I'm sure you talked about on your show the expectation of a suspension. You see the suspension, six games that could go down to four. Is that what you thought it would be?
Pretty much so. I kind of figured that he would do one of those deals where there were conditions applied, that if you behave properly, if you show some sort of change in your behavior patterns, we can reduce this. But and I'm glad to see that. It seemed to me like the right thing to do, not the fair thing, but the right thing to do.
And so then, interestingly, you know, here's a guy who was still 28 years old. He's among the handful of best quarterbacks in the National Football League. He has two Super Bowl rings. And the stories were out there that he was offered to the St. Louis Rams for the number one pick in the draft, and that the Rams flatly did not have any interest in making that deal. What's the reaction been of the St. Louis sports fan to that story?
I think they're all smart enough to know that was a smart thing to do. The Rams, look, they can't afford to bring in a quarterback who won't be available to you for the first 4 to 6 games and is right now a public relations nightmare. And like Herm Edwards said, if you think that the Pittsburgh Steelers were just as shocked as the rest of us that Ben was acting this way, then you're fooling yourself. So now I'm thinking, if I'm the Rams, wait a minute, why are you offering this guy to us? Is there something else we don't know? Now, you know, that's how I think, whether or not that's true or not. If you're a smart person, you've got to go, wait a minute, what are you selling me? No, that's all right. You go to somebody else.
So tonight when the draft kicks off at 7:30 and the Rams are on the clock, who do they take and who do the fans want them to take?
Well, I think the fans, it's divided. I think a lot of fans want them to take Sam Bradford, and a lot of fans are saying, no, Ndamukong Suh. I think ultimately they'll go with Sam Bradford, unless, of course, the Washington Redskins really are the trade partner that most of us think that there's got to be some conversation there. Because if you think that the only reason that the Redskins and the Rams were talking this week is because they wanted to flip-flop fifth and seventh round picks and bring in Adam Carricker, you're kidding. This is one of those deals where the guy goes in to buy a suit and he can't make up his mind about the suit, so in the meantime, they sell him socks. That's what's going on here. Got to continue those conversations.
That is an awesome analogy, Mike. And Mike, Brian Burwell, you hear him on 101 ESPN in St. Louis.
Wait, at, just at, so, yeah. I get to, so Adam Carriker is Sox.
He's Sox.
Is that where you're going?
I don't want to be harsh, but it works for the time being.
That was really
maybe he's a nice tie. Anyways, at the end of the day, Brian, do you think there will be a trade? How would you assess the possibility of the Rams trading out of the number one pick tonight?
I think it's always a possibility if you can get value. If the Redskins offered the fourth pick, maybe a second round pick, and then threw in an Albert Haynesworth or LaRon Landry, or even dangled Jason Campbell. Isn't that something you would at least consider and take seriously? Go, is that worth that? Because then you can still get, maybe you get another defensive lineman, maybe you get an offensive lineman, maybe you get a wide receiver. Now you're going, hey, we look pretty good.
Be very interesting to watch, yep. And we always appreciate your perspective. Brian, thanks for jumping in this morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
My pleasure.